Coming up, a look at what a global citizens' assembly would look like.
You're listening to Focus with Cassie McCullough on ABC Radio Sydney.
Well, have you found yourself losing faith in the democratic process recently? You wouldn't be alone if you said yes. Democracy, is it serving us well in 2018, as well as it was when the current system we have was dreamed up all those years ago? What if there was another way? What if you, just an average citizen, was asked for your input into a decision that affected not just the people of Australia, but possibly even the world? Well, these are some of the ideas that are entertained by the New Democracy Foundation. They've recently put forward a proposal for a global citizens' assembly. It's part of deliberative democracy. To tell us more, we're joined by the founder and director of New Democracy. His name is Luca Belgiorno-Nettis, and he's also the executive director of Transfield Holdings. Good morning, Luca.
Thank you, Cassie.
Wouldn't it be great to imagine you could be plucked out of obscurity just randomly to have an input into a decision that could change the very lives of everyone on the planet?
Indeed, and I think if you were paid for it as well, you'd probably have more incentive to do so. And in fact, you'd want to conceive of a forum that was bringing all those incentives to the table. But essentially, there is a belief that we have, people like me who can be described as deliberative Democrats, there's a belief that everyday people, when they're given the opportunity and the space to consider complex subjects together, deliberating together, come up with reasonable answers. That's the principle.
So inside everybody is a balance, a scale of good and bad and fair and unfair, and more often than not, that balance comes out equally.
In groups.
In groups.
In groups.
Uh-huh.
In groups, because the diversity of the group brings all of these different perspectives, and there's quite a lot of academic study that shows that there is a great sense in that. There's a great strength in having diversity who are not necessarily experts. But that's not to say the experts don't have a role. Of course they do. The so-called sector professionals, domain experts, have a role all the time because they're the ones who have immersed themselves in for most of their lives in whatever the subject might be, whether it's, poverty or agricultural, whatever the subject is.
The health system, education.
Yeah. Education. You obviously have to look to those people. But, of course, those experts in their own right don't necessarily agree. So what I describe as being an optimal democratic structure is to find the perfect, there's never a perfect marriage, the perfect marriage between the knowledge, the domain expertise, and the representative class, the political class. And I see the representative class, the political class, as being just as I've described it, representative of the population at large, a mini public, a mirror image of what the population is out there. And that was the way democracy was originally conceived.
Yeah. To understand some of the principles of deliberative democracy and even the global citizens' assembly, we really have to go back to the birth of democracy. How did it work then?
Well, as most people in their essential understanding of the history of democracy do appreciate that it was conceived in Greece, in ancient Greece. But what's not occurring is real understanding of actually what it was in Greece. Greece did not have elections. Ancient Greece did not affect their representative class by elections. They did it as in a jury process, by lot, randomly recruited. Now, that seems to be a crazy, idiotic, why would you even consider that as a parliamentary constituency? Mm-hmm. To, in fact, just have any man, woman off the street recruited like that, at random. But the beauty of that process is, firstly, it is indisputably, quintessentially representative. You cannot say that that little mini public does not have the characteristics of the population at large. And secondly, it has the other advantage, is that it's not corruptible. People have not sort of in the process of seeking election, having to put themselves forward, seek supporters in a particular way that then they become tied to in terms of vested interests. And of course, they've got to rotate. In any parliamentary situation, it has to be a rotated exercise so you don't entrench incumbency. So what happened in Greece, they were there for only a year and then they were rotated out. So, but then associated with that notion of representativeness is the notion of deliberation. Then the jury is a classic analogy, of course. People, when they go to a jury, are selected for a jury, they apply themselves to the matter at hand, and they're not looking to have power games or political games amongst themselves, generally speaking. They are generally well-intentioned to do the right thing by that process, which is to determine the guilt or innocence of that convicted person in question. So similarly, in a parliamentary process with that sort of model, people are intent on doing the right thing, focused on the subject. What we do today is we conflate. We have actually entangled the personal ambitions of a candidate with public policy development. So the problem is that when a candidate puts himself up for election, he talks about public policy, but he's conflating that public policy that he's putting his platform on with his own power ambitions to mm-hmm. his or her own power ambitions mm-hmm. to win election, and that is problematic.
So with the Athenian model, you have you may not have the smartest person in the room, and you may not have the most honest and true person, but they're just an average representation, and there will be some balance in the group, and there aren't vested interests, there aren't ancient enmities, there aren't political kind of debates,
baggages, correct.
And then as you flush out the system regularly, there aren't these
entrenched positions and entrenched powers and you know, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. You don't get that because, I mean, we do that anyway through that process of regular elections. But in the process of having the elections, for a start, we are actually creating divisions to start with, because me as a candidate, say, and you as a candidate cannot agree with each other because we have to distinguish ourselves. So we are actually putting up barriers in respect of collaboration right from the beginning, from the get-go. Whereas in this process, there's none of those barriers to start with. Yes, we all come with our preconceptions of things, but in the process of a deliberative exercise, and this is, you know, there are models of actually facilitating deliberation, you know, more effectively than otherwise, if you like. But in these facilitated deliberative exercises, people can move their positions without feeling as if they've become embarrassed or you know, have lost face. Yes.
They don't have to cling to
their positions.
They don't
have to cling to their positions. Whereas in politics today, you know, because you're coming as a whatever, green, red, blue, whatever, you know, you've got to stick to those colours, because if you don't stick to those colours, you're not blue anymore.
Yes. We're talking on ABC Radio Sydney with Luca Belgiorno-Nettis. He's the director of the New Democracy Foundation, which looks at different ways that democracy can flourish, and are we actually doing it the best way that we can right now? Where are we in the dream that began in Athens all those centuries, millennia ago? Now, Luca, I want to hear about the Global Citizens Assembly, but in my mind I'm already thinking we have tried some of these processes in Australia. I think in Geelong there was a...
Correct.
Yeah, what was that?
So there's been about 20 or more of these so-called citizen juries, and in the case of Geelong there was a circumstance where the council had been terminated for misconduct, as it happens every now and again in various local councils. And the Victorian government then sought to go through an exercise of understanding how they might reconstitute that council. And in the process, they said, well, why don't we go to the community and see what the community would like? Great. you know, it kind of makes a whole lot of sense. And the model that, well, and then they came to us as an organisation to help design that process of engaging with the public, with the community. And the typical process that we recommend is we would regard as best practice community engagement. It's not a focus group. It's not a survey. It's not a town hall meeting. It's a citizen jury. It's a deliberative representative exercise. And it's not a focus group that just happens over a day or 2 days. It's not a town hall, which is just an evening or whatever. And it's not a survey, which is, you know, doesn't give any opportunity for deliberation or in-depth investigation. It is a jury that is random recruitment of the local community.
How many people?
We had in this particular case 100.
100 people. And what was the commitment they made?
Good question. You know, of course, we're talking about 50 hours face-to-face. So it was about 3 months every second Saturday where they'd come together, they'd hear from academics, local government experts, and they deliberated over this period for 50 hours and then came up with the recommendations themselves, which they wrote. And we're very happy to say that the recommendations they came up with were embraced by the government and actually taken up by the government.
Mm. Were they remunerated?
Yes, token. I think it was only about $500 or something like that. Don't quote me, but it wasn't a lot of money.
Yeah, so they weren't giving up their jobs. They weren't.
No, it was a Saturday
morning. Okay, yes. Okay. Yeah. So now you're taking this idea further, and you've put together a proposal which we learned in the last 24 hours hasn't actually been successful, which is a pity. But you put this proposal forward for a global citizens' assembly. Before you explain that, what's wrong with the UN, the United Nations approach to global representation? Everyone gets a seat at the table and there's, you know, organisations like to look after health and...
Yeah. I think the fundamental criticism from our perspective of deliberative Democrats is that the UN is captive and the challenge, of course, and the fact that I'm saying this now doesn't necessarily mean there's an easy solution, but I think fundamental problem with the UN is it's captive to national sovereignties that in their own right are determined by domestic political interests, so that you cannot find a global agreement that is not contingent on a domestic political situation. Now, that sounds like, well, hello, that's the history of the world. Fine. But the problem with the way that politics works at the national level is that it's because it's short term, because it doesn't look to really a global perspective, it's very much always domestic. The contest between the political actors is very domestic. So unless there is a clear domestic interest to the global proposal, it doesn't get any traction.
So a politician might turn up at Geneva and make their grandstanding speech on the floor of the UN, but actually be talking to their constituency.
Correct, which is the name of the game. Mm. So what we're trying to do is to circumvent that by inviting other political representatives into the assembly, and those other political representatives are being invited not because they're necessarily national representatives, but because they are one of a global community. And they come to that table like a jury.
Give us an example of that. So are you saying that they have a speciality, they have a certain level of knowledge?
No, no. Okay. These are, once again, randomly recruited. So this can be a fisherman from Mali, or it can be an IT professional from San Francisco. They're randomly recruited. It could be in the order of 500 people that look to deliberate together on whatever the global question is. Now, what would be the global question to deliberate on? Well, we can name any question we'd like, you know, whether it's a sort of the Syrian ceasefire or the nuclear non-proliferation exercises.
Okay, so what leaps into my mind is those individuals, the IT professional will but possibly be able to say, yes, I can stop my work and my employer will understand I have to go to the Global Citizens Assembly and do my bit. The fishermen from Mali might have other priorities.
They'll all be remunerated, and the fishermen from Mali will probably be more incentivised to come than the IT professional, as you say.
Maybe, but maybe vice versa. Or she has some cultural responsibilities.
Indeed. But that's a bit like the way the jury process works today. We're talking about a hypothetical exercise now, which has not been, embedded yet in institutional practice. But let's just assume we're starting off by saying there's no obligation, so one person can't do it. But because there'll be some remunerative exercise, and how we develop that remuneration is another question. But let's just assume if one person is not prepared to go for whatever reasons, his next door neighbours could be.
And so you're putting a lot of faith into human nature, actually. Luca, there's so many ideas here that I feel like we need a global citizen agenda just to address some of them. We're out of time, but thank you for this, and thank you for the ideas you've brought to us, and thank you also for this process that you're already enacting in Australia.
Thank you very much, Cassie, for having me on.
That's Luca Belgiorno-Nettis. He's the founder and director of the New Democracy Foundation, which has recently put together this idea, this proposal for a global citizens assembly. And as Luca says, they're already doing these deliberative democracy processes around Australia, 20 trials of it so far. What do you think about that? You can't say we don't bring you the big ideas here on Focus. Cassie McCullough with you this morning. Jim has sent a text in 0467 922 702. He says, of course representatives selected by ballot would be corruptible. Yes, I think Luca acknowledges that, Jim. I think that's all factored in because they're just as corruptible as anybody else. But perhaps if they're rotated in and out faster, they don't get a chance to make vested interests continuing. Also, another person says, we have lost faith, not in democracy, but in our self-serving major parliamentary parties. Yeah, I think that might be true. Now, just out of interest, this is just news that's just come to hand in the last hour. The ACT government will release four models for Canberra's new compulsory third-party insurance scheme presented to a citizens' jury. The jury will select one next Sunday, which the government has committed to implementing. So there you go. It's happening. It's happening, people. Power is in the hands of the people. Well, in some cases it is. Let's have some music. Here's a song that I love and a man that I love. His name's Jose Gonzalez. It's from the album Veneer. It's called